Welcome to CSEK News, the only news source in the North truly dedicated to local stories on the ground. CSEK News addresses the diverse needs of the underserved communities between Burns Lake and Haida Gwaii through firsthand stories and in-depth interviews. CSEK News funding is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially support campus and community radio stations in Canada, as well as the Government of Canada. We are your hosts, Pam Hassan and Dan Messick, and we are on the dial at 93.9 FM, Smithers Community Radio. Our call letters are CSEK, and we are broadcasting from the unceded Gitindam territory, home of the Wet'suwet'en Nation. Follow CSEK News online at smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook or Instagram at Smithers Community Radio.
Today on CSEK News, with temperatures expected to drop in the coming weeks and as snow slowly creeps down the mountains, concern is growing once again in Prince Rupert amid confirmation last month by Mayor Herb Pond that Prince Rupert's water system infrastructure may be in a much more precarious situation than previously disclosed by the city. During a chamber luncheon, Mayor Pond described the critical state of Prince Rupert's water pipes, some more than 100 years old, and that the situation could get a lot worse before it gets better if federal funds earmarked for a complete overhaul of Prince Rupert's water mains doesn't come through soon enough. Just this past year, there have been more than 22 water main ruptures in the city of 12,000 people. In comparison, Richmond, a population 20 times that of Prince Rupert, has only experienced a handful of water main breaks, and winter is just around the corner. During his address at the chamber luncheon in late September, Mayor Pond admitted the city hasn't been completely forthcoming with how serious the situation is with Prince Rupert's water pipes, telling a group of local business leaders and residents that in December 2022, the city's reservoir was 45 minutes away from being completely dry, which could have led to catastrophic ruptures throughout the entire water system. Although Mayor Pond said the situation is dire, he also reassured residents that crews are working extremely hard to ensure the city is as best prepared for the coming winter, when freezing temperatures are expected to cause much more damage. But he is hopeful the federal funds needed to remedy the situation will come through very soon. We'll check in with Mayor Herb Pond about what the city needs to fix their water pipe problem and how they are preparing for the coming winter. But first, we check in with Caitlin Bailey, Fire Information Officer with the Northwest Fire Center, about the wrap-up of the worst fire season in BC and Canada's history, and what crews and residents could be in for, as several fires will likely hold over into the new year. Stay with us.
I'm Caitlin Bailey. I'm the Fire Information Officer here at the Northwest Fire Center in Smithers.
Great, Caitlin. Thanks so much for being with us here on CSEK News. Of course, as you know, we've had the worst fire season in Canadian history and also quite a bad season here in BC. We've seen a lot of fires here in the Northwest and some that are still smoldering here in October as well, even despite the rain. So maybe you can give us an update as to what is going on in the Northwest Fire Center right now and what crews are expecting to see in the next few months and over winter, if there are any fires that may be problematic between now and next spring.
Again, yeah, absolutely. So currently there are still 64 wildfires across the Northwest Fire Center. 35 of those are listed as under control, which is a wildfire that's believed to be under control, will not spread any further. 22 are being held, which is a wildfire that's not likely to spread beyond predetermined boundaries. And 7 are still listed as out of control. So the shift to cooler, wetter weather over the last couple of weeks really allowed us to move many of the fires that were classified as out of control before into those under control and being held statuses. There aren't currently any crews on the fire actioning the fires. We're continuing to monitor them and are poised to be able to respond if areas of concern do show increased fire behavior. And as you sort of mentioned or alluded to, due to ongoing drought conditions in some parts of the Northwest Fire Center, it is possible that some wildfires will continue to burn into next spring. However, that's really dependent on what we get for fall and winter precipitation over the next couple of seasons. So crews are much smaller than they were in the summer, as many firefighters return to school or other commitments. But those that are still working are continuing with training that we weren't able to deliver in the spring because of the early fire season. and or some are assisting with project work, including pile burning and fuel management projects.
Kayla, I guess one of the other questions I had was, you know, in terms of those holdover fires, I know you mentioned it depends on the precipitation, but what are the fire crews and the officers looking for to make sure that those holdover fires aren't, super problematic in the springtime, or the indications that you will need to deal with some of them?
Yeah, whether they become a concern will really be dependent on those weather indices. So they'll be looking to precipitation levels and different things to see whether those fires will be a concern in the spring.
Yeah. Is there any monitoring in terms of the areas where those fires are? And who does that monitoring, and when does that happen? Granted that we are seeing quite a lot of rain right now in the region, as well as, you know, snow is coming down the mountain slowly, but, you know, it's not going to be too much longer until we start seeing snow on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So we're still monitoring all the fires, and especially those ones that are still classified as out of control. That's done by firefighters themselves or zone staff, so people at the different zones across the Northwest Fire Center. And they'll continue to keep checking on those fires and look for different problematic areas, because while we have gotten rain, we haven't gotten the same amount of rain everywhere, and there are still some fires that are considered out of control.
Yeah, I guess maybe you could mention some of the fires that were kind of the big ones of concern during this past year.
Yeah, sure. There's a number of different fires burning close to communities and in those interface areas. So at the start of the year, there was Powers Creek, which was close to Smithers. There's a number of fires in the Nandina Fire Zone, including Peacock Creek, which was close to Houston, Parrot Lookout, Tintagel Fire, both close to Burns Lake and Francois Lake. In the Cassiar Zone, there's the Little Blue River Fire, which impacted traffic on Highway 37. And there's other ones just sort of close to communities as well, north of Hazleton, near Sikidak community and Gitwongak. Crews right now are sort of back in their home areas, doing a lot of project work, sort of as I mentioned, things like fuel management and pile burning. And right now, as of now, applications are open for people to apply to become firefighters for next season. So we encourage people to apply with the Northwest Fire Center. So that hiring process will start this month.
And I guess, Caitlin, just the last thing for you, you know, finishing up this season, what is kind of the, if there has been done a post-mortem, what were some of the things that went right this year, but also that didn't go exactly as planned?
Yeah, we're still sort of in the middle of that, like reviewing everything. So the Fire Center does reviews, as well as each of the zones do reviews. And they're also, whether it's not quite as formal or it might be more informal, but they're constantly sort of thinking back and reviewing what happened on the different fires. So the feedback will come later on after we sort of do these debriefs and reviews of the season.
All right, great, Caitlin. We'll leave it there for now, but thanks so much for your info today, and we'll be sure to check in about 6 months when we move into spring.
Thanks, Dan.
That was Caitlin Bailey from the Northwest Fire Center. Coming up next, we speak with Prince Rupert Mayor Herb Pond.
Hi, I'm Herb Pond. I'm the mayor of Prince Rupert, and I'm sitting in Prince Rupert.
Wonderful, Herb. Thanks so much for being with us again here on CICK News. Of course, we wanted to check in with you about a pretty critical situation in Prince Rupert that we've chatted about before. I know that the city is working on the situation, but maybe you can give us an update as to what is going on with the current water system situation in Prince Rupert as we get closer to those freezing conditions in the wintertime.
Yeah, listen, I appreciate your interest. It is a concern as winter comes to us. We've experienced to this point in time, I've lost track of the number, it was over 22 breaks. I think we've exceeded that now, but a record number of breaks already this year. As this water system, which largely went into the ground all at once when the community was founded over 100 years ago, is just reached end of life. And so, as you will recall, I think we received $65 million from the province to put towards repairing pipes. We've used that and leveraged it to create a $205 million renewal project that would do about a third of the water mains. And so to get to $205 million, we've had to put up $58 million. and we are seeking $82 million from the federal government. And that application is in, and we're working with them to answer questions that they have. All of this, of course, critical not only to keeping water flowing so that people can continue to inhabit Prince Rupert, but to ensure that this port terminal, which is anchoring, a trade corridor, continues to operate for British Columbia and for Canada. So we're waiting on the $82 million answer. We are unable to spend any money within the project scope area in terms of replacement without disqualifying ourselves from the 82. So we kind of, as patiently as we can, we're waiting. Where pipes break within the scope area, we can go in and we can patch. We can't replace. Then we often are leaving, unfortunately, the holes open so that if we get yes, we can get back in there quickly. We have started filling some of those holes in with gravel because we're now concerned about weather, just exactly as you said. It's the freeze. It's any movement in the soil, quite frankly, around the pipes that takes a very, very weak pipe and severs it.
As you mentioned there, you're doing what you can, having to wait for this funding, but it sounds like you don't really have a bead on when this funding will come through. And I guess the other question on that is, the federal government, they are looking into a lot of these infrastructure projects across the country. How are you trying to plead the case to them over other communities that are looking for obviously similar investments?
We've been able to and it doesn't take a lot, actually, because people are very well aware of it, sort of leverage the fact that if we're unable to have water flowing to houses, we're unable to see terminals that matter to the entire Canadian economy operate. So whether it's coal or grain or containers coming and going, wood pellets, all the products that move from other Canadian communities through this terminal or through the terminal to those communities, that whole supply chain could be at risk. And then in addition to this, so with that, we've had tremendous help from the Port of Prince Rupert. We've had tremendous help from the surrounding First Nations because there are more of the members of each of those nations living here in Rupert than there are back in the home communities. And so this is it's kind of mission critical to a whole lot of organizations. And the Premier recognized that. The Premier's been one of our greatest allies in this. In addition to that, our MP and MLA have both been working their magic as much as they can when we're not able to be there. So yeah. It's been a big effort by a whole lot of people.
No doubt. Recently, you had mentioned at a chamber meeting that we were 45 minutes away from the reservoir of the city of Prince Rupert being empty last December 2022. Have you been able, has the city been able to shore up that situation at all since December 2022 going into, December's only about a couple months away?
Yeah. No. The highest priority for when we get the green light, because I'm going to be hopeful, when we get the green light on the $82 million is to replace that section of pipe that goes from the waterfront. Our water supply comes from a lake on the other side of body of salt water. There's an undersea pipe that comes up to the shore on the Prince Rupert side. The entire pipe that runs from that shoreline all the way up to the reservoir is compromised. And so that will be the very first piece of the project that would take us to where we could at least relax and say our reservoir is secure. We're very concerned. I've got to say our crews have been amazing. As soon as there is a major break, they're on it. They're looking for ways to reroute water. They do everything they can. But you're absolutely right. The fear. I think you'll recall the fear is that if the reservoir run dry, the pressure in the pipes may fall to the point where we get what we refer refer to as a linear cavitation, where for an extended length of pipe, the pipe could collapse. So that's at all costs, that's what our crews make sure we don't allow it to happen.
I know you also mentioned in that same lunch discussion that, you know, it was obviously a pretty critical situation, but what would it look like if there was an evacuation for Rupert? Are there plans in place? Because obviously that was a pretty close call, but it sounds like, you know, things aren't necessarily that dire at the moment, but the potential is there, of course.
Right. I've got to be, you know, very cautious with words here, right? So we were 45 minutes away from an event that might have led to that kind of cavitation, and that kind of cavitation might have led to a need to evacuate all or at least large parts of the community. So there would have been a few more steps in place, I guess is what I'm saying. But no, it is of significant concern. You know, there are some plans in place to take care of an orderly evacuation. It's not like people would have to leave in a nanosecond. It's just that we could be bringing in potable water. We could be making sure that people have drinking water, you know, whether by truck or whatever. It's just the longer term. You cannot continue to live in a community where you can't flush a toilet, where you can't have a shower, where you can't wash your clothes, you know, all of those things. Restaurants, hotels can't operate. And so there would be time. People don't need to worry about panicking. But I would suggest it is normal for communities to recommend in any emergency situation that people have a 3-day supply of fresh water. And I would say more than ever, that's a really, really good idea.
Just a couple other things for you, Mayor. You know, obviously, this is just one aspect of the infrastructure needs in Prince Rupert. What else is going on? As you mentioned, you know, it's really difficult to deal with these situations because once you start opening things up and attack one part of the issue, and another opens up. You know, what's the plan to deal, hopefully, perhaps better than last year, knowing that there probably will be more of these main ruptures in the coming months?
Well, so, you know, if we can get to the place and, you know, hopefully sooner rather than later where we get approval on the 82 or in fact, a no, you know, one of the things we've said to the federal government is if you're going to say no, please say no quickly, because then we'll regroup, we'll take the money that we do have and we'll deploy it and you know, we'll do some things. So hopefully, you know, where we have breaks, we'll be able to actually go in and effect real repair. And our intention is, you know, one of the things about the $205 million plan is rather than just going in and replacing water lines and then having to come back a few years later and redo sewers or whatever, is we're putting in enough funding in there that we can go in and do a proper job once. So go in, replace the water line, replace the sewer line, because they're all of the same vintage. And then put the road back together properly so that people end up at the end of a rather messy process, ending up at least with a street that is new and functional and shouldn't have to be torn up for many, many years to come. So that's the goal, right, is to make sure that we do it right step by step.
Yeah, no, that was the you know, last thing I wanted to ask about. Obviously, you know, any of this work will be well welcomed, but it also comes with a disruption, you know, for a time. And I just wanted to ask it, you know, at this point, you know, when that money does come through, what can residents expect knowing that, you know, at the end of it, they're going to have new pipes?
Yeah, so it's going to be messy. You know, I liken it to living in your home while you're renovating. There's just no way that you can do that without getting drywall dust in your cereal, right? It is a messy process. So, you know, where we have to go and tear up a street, it could well be that people aren't able to get to their, you know, driveway with their car. The street will be closed. It will be torn up. We'll have to run above ground temporary pipes to houses, basically off of hoses. So it'll be boiled water advisories, traffic rerouted. We'll be trying, more than trying, we will be communicating often and clearly where we're going next, what's going to happen. But it will be organized chaos for 3 years on a sort of rotating basis. And the other part is there will be people who look at their roads and say, boy, I can't wait till they get to my house. And yet the pipe under that road may not warrant us getting to that particular stretch. So there is a map that clearly delineates in red all the areas of town that are identified as the highest risk pipe. And people can look at that and determine, you know, whether they're on the list. But then beyond that, we'll be helping them to understand when they might be on that list.
All right, Mayor, we'll leave it there for now, but we thank you so much for your time today. Of course, we'll stay in touch about the situation as it progresses, but good luck with your efforts.
Listen, I appreciate your helping us to spread the word, Dan. I appreciate every moment of it. Thank you.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. CICK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to our producer Pam Hassan and all of our roving reporters, I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.